Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass defect, lyrical oxidation. Your irrelevant mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatrons, gamma rays, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on. Transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecule spontaneous combustion. Bam. Law of definite proportion gain. Anyway, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc. When I rap, you think iodine, nitrate, activate. Right, uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Balance with some balance, then you add a little talent in. Careful, careful with those ingredients. They can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground.
Welcome to Spark Science, where we explore stories of human curiosity. I'm Regina Barber DeGraff. I teach physics and astronomy at Western Washington University. And I'm here with my co-host, my tallest friend, Jordan Baker.
Hello. I have no credentials other than tallest friend.
You earned that.
Right. I earned it. Lots of hormones and milk that I drank as a young child.
Well, we were from Linden, so we got
right.
it. Yeah.
Yeah. We were force-fed milk.
We were.
By the gallons.
By tubes.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
At school.
Yeah.
So we actually, this is a total aside. Remember when in middle school we were like right. Our middle school was right in front of the Dairy Gold.
Yes.
And it stunk like rotten milk,
right.
like all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's how you knew. You grew up in Linden.
Right, exactly. You do improv at the Upfront Theater. Are you doing that tonight?
I probably am.
Probably?
It's Thursday night, so okay. I can just drop in if I want to. So
you should, because Jake and I are actually going to visit you tonight. So our listeners, listen to this. This will have happened in the past when we aired this show, but I will finally go watch Jordan Baker be an entertainer on the stage. I'm going to do it tonight, so you better go.
Does that mean I have to go to one of your classes?
No.
Okay, excellent.
You should, though. But you can be one of my demo guys.
Sure.
Okay. All right, well, I'm super excited about today's show. We have somebody else from Western Washington University, and I'm going to let Jordan introduce her.
This is Dr. Heather Fullerton. We're going to be talking about bacteria and volcanic vents.
Volcanic vents.
I'm not sure how the two intersect.
All right. But she's a postdoc or a postdoctoral research associate in the biology department at Western Washington University. So welcome. Thank you for coming to talk to us, Heather.
Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Heather. Does anyone call you that?
No.
Well, it's
no
nice
one
to
calls
have
me
you
Dr.
here.
Fullerton either. So.
Okay. Well, I'll call you Dr. Fullerton.
No. That's just weird.
Let's call her Dr. Heather.
Dr. Heather. I think that sounds cool. Growing up, I never knew what the heck a postdoc was. Jordan, do you know what a postdoc is?
A postdoc?
Postdoc or postdoctoral research associate.
Just the postdoc sounds more of like a surgical, like somebody who does sutures and stuff.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I know pretty much nothing about human physiology, so okay. Wow. Not doing that. It means I got a PhD and I'm not yet a professor. So I'm like in the nether region between having a real job and not being in school anymore.
Tell us a bit about yourself. How'd you get into, we are going to talk about bacteria and volcanic vents, but how did you get into this? Like, where did you get your doctorate degree?
Okay.
How did you end up at Western?
So I guess it actually started in high school. I took a microbiology class, and we went around and swabbed places around the school and streaked that out onto media plates and looked at what grew after, like, a day. And I was like, oh, my God, there's all this stuff around me, and I can't see any of it. And
yeah.
I was just super excited. And
what was the dirtiest place in your high school?
I think it was, like, the benches
right.
where everyone would sit and eat lunch and stuff. And the bathrooms were actually really clean.
Right, yeah.
Because those got cleaned every day. So
I've seen a fair amount of, you know, kid shows that do this. My daughter
yeah.
watches something called Rough Ruffman, and they did this, and the dirtiest place was the phone. Like, you know, the landline phone. That was the dirtiest
thing. What
about
cell phones?
It was like an older show.
Oh.
They weren't invented yet.
Right,
yeah.
Or they just didn't do that. I mean, it was like an actual, like, lab or something that they were
yeah.
looking at.
Yeah, I heard cell phones are like one of like the grossest places
mm-hmm.
ever
yeah.
right now.
Because we take them everywhere.
Yeah. In the bathroom.
Yeah.
Who? Gross. Who takes? I do.
Yeah. Everyone does. Okay. So, high school.
So high school, and that was in Kirkland.
Oh, you're a Washingtonian. Awesome.
Yeah. And then UW has a microbiology major. And so I was like, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
And then, so I did that, and my senior year, I was like, okay, what do I do now? And I was working as a lab tech in a research lab in at UW, studying mouse muscle biology.
Okay.
So totally different. And I was like, I'm going to apply to grad school because I don't know what to do now. And my couple of my professors were like, you should totally apply to grad schools. You should think about going to an Ivy League school.
Wow.
Go over to the East Coast, get something different. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
So I went to Cornell, and like the more I thought about it, like where I was deciding on what I wanted to do for grad school, I was like really excited about microbial metabolism. And so it goes back to, you know, my micro labs at UW. Like we went around and we isolated microbes from all sorts of different environments. And I was like, this is absolutely crazy that there's all these microbes everywhere. They're living off of all sorts of different things. What else is out there?
Yeah.
And what are they doing? And how are they making a living? And so that's what I did at grad school. I had a couple different organisms that I studied, and they degraded toxic organic compounds. So things that cause cancer in humans, and that are, one of them is super prevalent, trichloroethylene, which is two carbon molecules double bonded together with three chlorine molecules on them.
Okay, I'm trying to visualize that. I'm bad at chemistry.
Yeah.
yeah. As in, I didn't take it. So I'm a terrible scientist in that way.
Well, it's a really common molecule. It's a really heavy molecule. And it's used a lot in like industrial processes.
So did you do that in at Cornell, or did you do some of that at University of Washington as well?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
This was all Cornell. So, I mean, I had a lot of lab experience. I started working in a lab my freshman year at UW.
Wow. That's very lucky of you. I mean, it's such a huge school that like it's hard to get in to do research.
Yeah, I think I was just really excited to get experience and get in a lab. And so I worked in a couple different labs, and none of them had anything to do with my career now.
Wow.
And I think that's why I was able to get into the lab, because I wasn't picky about what I was going to work on.
Right.
And
that's a lesson to, I think, any one of our listeners, our younger listeners that want to be a scientist. Like, wherever you end up, however you get there, sometimes we need to be less picky.
Yeah. And so mostly... I chose the labs I worked in. They had advertisements out, and it was a paid position. And I was like, sweet, I'll get paid $7 an hour to wash lab wear.
Right, right.
Yes. But it got my foot in the door. And then there was like, you know, it's like, there's no dirty dishes. Do you want to learn how to set up this very standard biological reaction right now? And I was like,
and you're already
yes,
there.
I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do want to learn how to do that.
Wow.
And so I learned a lot of basic biology techniques while getting paid to do it.
Yeah.
And so that was awesome.
And then, so after Cornell, you graduated with your PhD in 2012. You told me this. I'm not just psychic. But and then you applied for this thing called a postdoc, which a lot of people do after they get a PhD.
Yeah.
And you decided to come here to Western.
Yeah.
Well, did you want to come back to the Northwest? Was that?
Oh
like
yeah, that was
the goal.
When you live other places, you realize how awesome the Northwest is.
Right. Yes, for our listeners, you know, in Italy, we have like four.
come check us out.
Yeah, yep. I know, right?
Totally. So yeah, it was great. You know, my family's here, so it's, they're all in Kirkland in Seattle, so it's an easy drive to go visit them.
Right.
Instead of an all-day flight.
Right,
from...
they're just far enough away.
Yeah, in Kirkland, Bellingham. Yeah, yeah, I agree. That's okay. But so this research that you did with, you were saying bacteria that decomposed, I'm using your words here, it was waste, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in, you said groundwater, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe you didn't say, but that's what you mean.
Yes. Yeah. So they're...
So you're doing that now here at Western.
The groundwater?
Yeah.
No, graduate research was with... the trichloroethylene degradation. But now it's the volcanic vents.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't
listen. Way sexier.
Yeah, way If you're just joining us, this is Spark Science. I'm Regina Barber DeGraff.
And I'm Jordan Baker. Today we're joined by Dr. Heather Fullerton, microbiologist. The music floats you gently on your toes.
Once you, how do you do that though? That's a personal question that I actually want to know. How do you go from, it's both interesting, bacteria decomposing waste in groundwater to volcanic vents. Like, what's the progression, and how did you get like a postdoc doing that? You know, because it seems to be fairly different. I mean, they deal with water.
So, a lot of the techniques for these environmental microbiology stuff is, the techniques are the same. You know, you'll go out into the environment, grab some wastewater or some volcanic sludge or whatever it is, and put it in a test tube, extract its DNA, or try and get something to grow.
Okay.
And the process is the same.
Okay.
Just different organisms are doing it. So the tools are still the same.
Okay. So what was the craziest story you have about, like, bacteria decomposing waste, you know, or eating waste?
It's gonna get crazy.
Yeah.
Well, so it was kind of gross.
Tell us the difference.
Bacterium is a singular bacteria.
Okay, there we go.
Or a singular organism. And there's never just one bacterium.
Right.
So this one bacteria that I worked with, which sounds weird, but yeah, this one bacteria that I worked with.
It's okay. Grammar isn't our specialty.
Yeah, we're scientists, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It had to grow with wastewater extract. So we had to go to the Ithaca wastewater treatment plant and get wastewater.
Fun.
Which is awesome and disgusting. And like, the wastewater processing is all done by bacteria.
Right.
For the most part.
And like, what kind of bacteria? Bacterium. I don't know.
Bacteria.
Bacteria.
There's lots of them. So there's the aerobic treatment. So those are all done by different microbes that break down the big stuff. But okay. Not the big stuff is filtered out. And
I love the skirting around the issue.
our radio listeners aren't seeing her face, and she's like, the big stuff.
We all know what we're talking about.
The solids.
That's actually how they talk about it.
Right.
So we'd have to go to the wastewater treatment plant and get wastewater treatment sludge that I would have.
How'd you get it?
So there's these
it's a ladle. Tell me it's a ladle.
Oh my god. No, it's a kitchen ladle.
So
no,
we would go and there's these big vats and they're sealed, so this is the anaerobic digester, so that's for more solids and it has a longer retention time.
Give us a definition of anaerobic for our
listeners. No oxygen. So the organisms I worked with in grad school all died in the presence of oxygen.
Wow.
Which made working with them really difficult.
Yeah. You being an oxygen breather.
Right, right. And them dying in the presence of oxygen. So it was like, when I was working on them, it was like, we had an indicator in our media that would turn pink if they got exposed to oxygen.
Wow.
So I'd pull out, you know, a month-long experiment that I was doing, and half of my bottles were pink, and I'd have to start all over again.
Oh, God.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'd pull out, the anaerobic chamber had a nozzle on the side. And so you'd put a container underneath the nozzle and collect it. And then I'd take it back to the lab and filter it up. And then I'd have to pour it back down the drain to go back to the wastewater treatment.
Oh, wow. You're like, you're returning to your home now.
Yeah.
Did you have to like distill it a little bit? Get like some of the water out so it's more solid?
No, we actually filtered out all the particulates. So we wanted
particulates.
Yeah, the bits. But it smelt.
Yeah,
it's not good. And it's also flammable.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So the wastewater treatment plant in Ithaca generated a lot of their energy by burning the methane that was produced in these giant tanks.
You were telling me also, we had met earlier, and you were telling me about the apartment or house that you were living in Ithaca, and how that relates to your research.
So it was actually just totally random, like moving across the country. I just looked up on Craigslist people who wanted roommates. So there's another grad student who was in the chemistry department, and she had a spare room. And so I was like, hey, I'm moving from Seattle. Can I live with you? And she's like, yeah, cool. Come on over. And there was an old electricity generator, like plant, electric, whatever they're called.
Electric plant.
Electric plant.
Sure.
Yeah. But they had these barrels of trichloroethylene.
Okay.
That they would use in whatever kind of process they used.
And what other things is that chemical in?
It's used, actually, it was used a lot in dry cleaning, too.
Okay.
But so somehow these barrels that they had got knocked over and they had this huge spill.
Okay.
The generator is, that plant is no longer in use, but they contaminated all of the houses down
nearby.
The hill.
Oh my God.
And so they had to send out these people to come and check basements. And our basement was contaminated. And so the people that came and tested the air quality, they were like really concerned when they heard what I worked with, if I would bring home samples from work.
Okay. Wow.
And of course, no.
Right. You're like, well, I have one in my pocket here.
Yeah, yeah. I sleep with it.
Jar of turds.
Yeah. From the wastewater treatment plant.
Yeah. Like, do you leave your lab coat at work? And I was like, do I wear a lab coat?
Yeah. I leave all five of them at work.
Yeah. I wear them all at once.
Yeah. So I don't have to wash them.
Yeah. But anyway, our basement was contaminated, so they put in like a radon aerator. So they suck the air from the basement to above the house, because the solution to pollution is dilution.
Right.
So.
Is that a song?
It's kind of what environmental engineers say.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you're allowed to be exposed to things in very small quantities.
Right. Wow. That's so sort of scary.
Yeah. But
it's not, yeah.
It was, it's also basement. Not like I hung out in my basement.
Right.
It was like this creepy old basement, like half finished.
You didn't play D&D down there?
No. There's so many spiders. So many spiders.
Mm. So you're like, I'm not worried about the contamination. It's the spiders. Yeah. That's what got me.
You're just joining us. This is Spark Science. I'm Jordan Baker.
And I'm Regina Barber DeGraff. Today, we are joined by Dr. Heather Fullerton, who studies bacteria.
Your poop is about 25% bacteria by weight.
And I just giggle. I just like, yeah, which, I can't.
So by weight, if I was to weigh my
stool samples,
25% of it would be bacteria. Wow.
I mean, that's a rough estimate, so.
That's huge, though. It's like.
There's actually lots of research right now going on in microbiology of poo.
Okay.
With the Human Microbiome Project.
Oh, wow.
So all the stuff you hear about diets affecting moods and stuff, that's all tracked through people's poo.
Wow. So tell me more about this project, actually. Because I know that there's citizen science projects. Is it one of those, or is it...
It depends on which project they're doing. Okay. But it's a huge project funded by the NIH and to study...
So for our listeners, NIH is the...
National Institute of Health.
Right.
Yeah, so they're the big funders of anything to do with human disease. Right. They will give you money.
So they're trying to figure out if there's anything to do with food and mood.
Yeah, food, mood, and like a systematic disease.
Mm.
Crohn's disease is one that's being studied.
Right.
Arthritis, schizophrenia, depression.
Wow. All through
acne.
Acne?
Yeah. Everything that you could think of, there's probably been a study to see how it relates to poo. Diabetes is a huge one.
Oh, yeah.
And they have all these mouse models that they use to study these. And they
little mice in bikinis.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh my God, it took me a while.
They grow up mice without any bacteria and then give them bacteria to see how they react and different ratios of different types of bacteria to see if they can develop diabetes in a different way or not.
Wow.
Because we eat food, it gets digested, but most of the digestion happens by bacteria in our guts.
Right.
Not by our human cells doing things.
Right. That's so fascinating.
I just learned a little bit about this last night in my last birthing class. And they were talking about the microbiome or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called.
I did not pay attention in my thing. Go ahead.
They were saying to like get a blanket from home to swaddle the kid in when you mm-hmm. first get there, and not the one from the hospital. And don't let people touch it within the first couple of hours because they don't want to put bacteria into your child, which would it's like in the stomach and in the system and stuff that can because
your kid is sterile before it's born.
Right.
And then depending on how your child...
Not reproductively sterile, but, you know,
bacterially.
Yes.
Because the placenta is a pretty good filter to keep everything out, and the mother's blood and everything, it's clean and it's good environment.
Right.
But as soon as the baby comes out into the open, it's, like I said, there's bacteria in the air, there's bacteria everywhere, it gets colonized by all these bacteria. And depending on how the child is born, either C-section or vaginally, the microbiome of the newborn is going to be different.
How drastic is that difference?
Well, so the vaginal birth, the child's going to be covered in bacteria from the vagina.
Okay.
And if it's a C-section, it's going to be like skin type bacteria, like regular adults have. Looking at the microbiome like this, like we've been doing, is a really new science.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, how new is it? Because I don't remember that word, and I gave birth...
Think about
almost 7 years ago.
I think the first time I started seeing stuff, research about the Human Microbiome Project was like 2009, 2008.
Oh, so yeah, I did just miss it. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And it was pretty hot when it first came out, and it still gets a lot of funding and a lot of importance, and there's a whole NIH like center for the Microbiome Project.
You know so much more than me, Jordan.
Right. So, speaking of things coming out of holes, the volcanic vents that I was still trying to relate.
How are we going to get back to that?
Yeah.
And so, tell us about this bacteria that you study now that are not like the ones in the groundwater. So how are they different? How do they relate to volcanic vents?
They're pretty much the same in that they're bacteria.
Excellent.
And that's about it.
That's it.
Well, I guess we're done here.
We're done. The end.
Microbial metabolisms. How do they live? Where do they live? What are they doing?
How do they make a living? That's
how do they make a living?
Which I loved that line.
There's tectonic plates. You guys talked about the volcanoes.
Oh, yeah.
Had that show.
So Heather is one of our listeners now. So she listened to our volcano show. And Dr. Kaplan Auerbach, she was talking about these volcanoes underwater. So you deal with cracks in the seafloor that are volcanic vents.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same thing. Kind of. So when it's exploding and there's lava flows and stuff, that's pretty exciting. And there's not going to be bacteria there.
Right.
Because it's a little too hot.
A little too hot.
But the ocean's crust is the largest aquifer. Whenever there's the magma comes up close, the water comes by it and gets superheated and finds these cracks and comes up through the cracks. It has to expel, like Yellowstone. But these are kind of constant trickling of water. So there's a couple different places I go. One is Lauihi Seamount, which is off the coast of the Big Island of Hawaii.
Okay.
It's going to be the next Hawaiian island in like 100,000 years.
Cool.
So right around the corner.
Book my vacation.
Yeah. Totally. But it's it erupted, its last eruption was in 1996, and it formed, so all these vents, all these cracks. So the magma chamber is still there, and the water is still trickling by it, so water still is going to get heated, even though it's not erupting. And so these vents have calmed down since then, and they're a little cooler. I went there in 2013, and the hottest temperature we recorded was about 50 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
So... not super warm.
So like 112 Fahrenheit. What's the conversion on that?
37 Celsius is body temp.
So that's 70. Oh, no, sorry, that's 98 point. Yeah, so 70 is like 20 something Celsius.
Yeah,
you so room temperature.
It's I don't know exactly what 50 Celsius is. I mean, it's
like 120.
100. Okay, so you were close.
I was close.
You're pretty good.
Yeah.
I
live next to Canada.
But I when I was growing up, I remember seeing these underwater volcanoes, and you were talking about how some of those get really, really hot, like up to like 300 degrees Celsius.
300
like,
plus.
Yeah.
It depends on the geology, how it's going to happen. Yeah. And so the Mid-Atlantic Ridge is where some of those hotter vents are.
Okay.
And you have these black smokers.
Yeah.
And so they're these giant chimneys that are spewing black smoke at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah.
And
they were really cool in the 90s. I remember it was like huge, right?
Well, they weren't discovered until 1977 mm-hmm. was when people first went there. And there is these giant animals that live there too, which are called giant tube worms.
So how giant are these tube worms? Like I love these things.
Is this like Tremors?
No.
Okay. They're not that huge.
Yeah.
Well, like 3 meters tall.
Oh my.
If it was like standing
like
up?
Yeah, like those are the biggest ones.
Like long, or like that's how fat they are.
That's how long they are.
Oh, that's how long.
But that's terrifying, though. 3 meters for a tube worm?
Yeah,
by these volcanic tubes.
I think that's right. Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen one in real life.
What's the diameter?
Not very big, actually. They're tall and skinny. Well, actually, there's another species that are short and fat.
Yeah, I think I've seen pictures of those.
Yeah, the short and fat ones live actually off the coast of Washington.
Oh wow! Here in Washington State. Yes.
Not Washington, D.C.
I know. So I'm just assuming that there are listeners that don't live in Washington State, even though 90% of our listeners are in Washington State.
Yeah. The volcano Axial, I think,
okay,
is right off the coast between Washington and Oregon.
Oh, cool.
And it has a cabled observatory. And okay. So we can constantly monitor how it's tremoring.
Wow.
Not because of the tremors.
Not because of the movie tremors.
Because of the worms.
Yeah. So I love how this is totally linking to our other show.
Yeah.
So you were saying where you look in Hawaii are these cooler vents.
Cooler vents, yeah.
And they don't have tube worms.
They don't,
like,
no.
Like the Fonz vents.
The Fonz,
they're super cool.
No one's going to kill
We did see a shark.
Yeah,
really?
What kind?
A 6-gill.
Nice.
And it was about 1,500 meters depth.
Wow.
And so those sharks are known for being down real deep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really interested in part of the ROV, so the remotely operated vehicle that we use. This stuff is too deep in the water to scuba dive to.
Right.
And so we have to use these remotely operated vehicles. And so you asked me, how did I transition?
Yeah.
Well, I saw an advert for, like, study volcanic vents. And I was like, yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
I get to use, like, a little control thing underneath the water.
We actually do have an Xbox controller
in the
control van for the
ROV. I don't play
ROV.
Video games, but I imagine that's awesome.
Yeah, right. You were saying that the ROV you use is the same one that found the Titanic?
Yeah.
We were just talking about that.
It's
done
lots. It's constantly in use.
Yeah.
And so you have to book time way in advance to use it.
Wow.
To get to take it out, and it's operated by the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, or HUI.
HUI. I don't know. I just like that word. Sorry.
But they have a bunch of other ROVs that they operate too, and
but everyone wants
AUVs. Well, it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're limited by how much science you can get done because
of
how much bottom time you can have.
Right.
And I mean the bottom of the ocean.
This is the worst episode ever. So you absolutely let's go back to your bacteria though.
Okay.
So you were saying no tube worms, but what are the things that or the entities you're looking at?
It's really cool at Lo'ihi. There are a lot of these different vents, and there is different bacterial mats. So our microbial mat. Which is something a lot of people don't know what that means.
No.
But
it sounds terrifying.
Your organic apple cider vinegar, you know how it has that stuff in it?
Yeah. Oh,
that
yeah.
would be like a bacterial mat kind
oh,
of.
Oh, good.
Or
they,
like
oh, bacterial
your,
mats taste good.
Your kombucha mother.
Oh my God, kombucha.
Like the yeast at like the bottom
yeah,
of
the,
a
Yeah, like
cardboard.
The leathery little stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So the bacterial mat actually has like a very distinct 3D structure for how the bacteria grow and interact. And so at the top of the mat, you're going to have different bacteria than at the bottom of the mat because the chemistry is going to be different.
And can you, even though this is bacteria, you can still see it with your naked eye. It's like that big.
So
the mat is.
The mat's that big. And so at Lo'ihi, you have very distinct mat morphologies, which is really cool. So there's my favorite ones are we call them veils. And it's this very delicate, fluffy, white, orangey material.
Cool.
Like a veil.
Yeah.
And it kind of like waves in the wind of the shimmering water, the hot water that's coming out of the vents. And you can so Jason, the ROV,
yeah,
one of the apparatus we use is a suction sampler. So it's a vacuum hose attached to the robot.
Right.
And you just suck up the seafloor.
You're vacuuming the seafloor.
Yes.
Well, it's dirty. Somebody's got to clean it.
Yeah. It's full of bacteria.
And it just, this veil material just peels off. It's interwoven and connected. So if you don't get the whole piece, there's still like this little like wavy veil in the...
Yeah.
And it's really pretty. And
all right, what kind of damage does that do, though, once you actually take that away?
So we actually did an experiment where we mowed down an entire vent field.
Wow.
And then
we just mowed it down.
Mowed
we
it down
see
like
what was going to happen.
With a bunch of like machine guns.
Yeah, right.
Well, you were talking you have to go out and poke things with a stick. And so that's what we did. You know, see how hard this rock is.
Yeah.
Does it fall over? No. So it's a real rock, not just a crusty bacterial mat.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so
that's
we cleared off this area and put down a marker, which was a PVC pipe square.
Okay.
Around where we mowed it down. And whenever we get money to go back, we'll go back and see how much it grew.
Okay. Compared to another sample, like a test site that, you know, that
mowed
down.
Yeah. We can do like in situ colonization experiments where we'll put down some sort of surface for bacteria to cling onto and grow.
Okay.
And so then we'll get those back after time, you know, like 1 day, 2 days, 3 days.
Right.
Depending on how good the weather is and
right.
how far away we move from those sites. At Luigi, it's really nice because it's just one smallish area and the weather is usually pretty good.
And you guys are on a boat that's like out there for days, right?
Yeah. So for that cruise, we were out.
So yeah, you call them scientific cruises, which I find adorable.
Yeah, it's not like a Princess Cruise Line, though.
It's not all-inclusive?
No, there's no alcohol allowed.
Oh.
And there's no sauna or swimming pool.
Why would you call it a cruise?
Right. It's on a boat.
It's on a big boat. It's 274 feet long.
But there's no pool.
No. There's something called the ocean that they can go in.
Right. No, we can't.
Oh, my God, that's right, because you don't want to contaminate.
Well, you don't want to... You can't really get back up.
Oh, yeah.
There's still somebody's got to have a rope ladder or something.
Probably. But there's also, you know, very powerful motors on these boats.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Yeah. So you don't go off the boat. You don't get to go swimming in the ocean.
Oh, wow.
But that cruise was 18 days long.
Oh, wow.
Which isn't that long.
It's not a 3-hour tour.
No. But we could see the Big Island of Hawaii for most of the time.
Like, you see it from afar. You're like, look at that.
Yeah, so we were pretty far away, and like on clear days when the haze was low, we could see it.
You'd go up into the crow's nest and say, land ho!
We weren't allowed to go up in the crow's nest either.
Oh my gosh!
But we could go up to the bridge.
The worst cruise
if we asked for permission. It's to keep us all safe.
Right. I mean, that is important.
It's government-funded research, you know, so we're not going out there to have a good time.
I think...
Trying to be responsible.
Fine.
With your tax money.
Right. Our listeners, we've actually brought this up. Some politicians like to portray government money as these scientists are going off and they're buying sports cars and they're like living up the life, but really we are not, right?
No. I mean, what sports car do you have?
I have a Fiat.
Ooh, yeah. That's sporty.
And a bike.
If you're just joining us, this is Jordan Baker, and today we're talking about life at volcanic vents.
Let's get back to the volcanic vents and we were talking about the black and white smokers at these really, really hot...
So there's been lots of TV shows, like Nova and specials on these black smokers.
Right.
And the tube worms, because the tube worms are super interesting.
Right.
You know, when they're first discovered, people are like, this is where life began.
Yeah.
Look at these animals. They're so primitive.
Yeah.
And then, so we've started looking at them more. And...
what have you discovered?
So they're not like animals like us in a way. I mean, they have a stomach, but they don't have a mouth or an anus.
How do they consume?
Yeah, how do they live?
Yeah.
How do they make a living?
Yeah, how do they make a living?
So they actually, their stomach is called a trophosome, and it's full of bacteria. And the bacteria, so they have those big plumes, the red plumes, and that brings in the chemicals that are released from the black smokers down to the bacteria. The bacteria transform that into energy and stuff and give that back to the tube worm.
Mm.
And so the tube worm is growing off of these bacteria that are in their gut.
Oh, wow.
Hmm.
And they're just, they're animals, but they're kind of like plants in a way because they're chemosynthetic. So these vents, very deep, very dark. We eat plants, or we eat animals that eat plants. And so all of our energy comes from the sun, ultimately.
Right.
But when you're living in an area where there is no sunlight, where do you get energy? And you get it from the chemical energy that's released from the core of our Earth.
Yeah. Wow. It's just, it's so amazing. So, and then, so you were talking about in these cooler areas where you did research, they're not black and white smokers. They're more red and orange for some reason.
Yeah, so they're cooler, and so the chemistry is different. And so these are really iron-dominated systems. So these, the black and white smokers are more sulfur-dominated.
Okay.
And so that these iron vents, they're going to be red and orange because that's the color of rust.
Right.
And so when it comes out of the crust, it's soluble iron. And then as the bacteria metabolize it, it turns into rust. So my bacteria poop rust.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they eat oxygen
that's
and poop
core.
Rust.
Yes.
Wow,
hardcore.
So awesome.
And the energy is a lot different. There's not a lot of energy that can be made from that process, not like the sulfur vents or the white and black smokers.
Okay.
And so there's not as much macrofauna.
Right.
So big animals. There are some shrimps and some fish.
Right.
That
are all the way down there by those vents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. But so that's at Lo'ihi, but at the Mariana Arc. So I went there in 2014 from Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Wow.
So I missed both holidays.
Right. On your fancy cruise with restrictions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And so it was off the coast of Guam. Super hot.
Merry Christmas.
Everything was decorated with, like, snowmen and palm trees. You're just like, what?
Awesome.
It's festive.
But you also had to wear pants and shoes because you're working in a lab.
Right, yeah.
And so it was, like, super hot and sweaty. There's all sorts of different types of vents along the Mariana Arc, which is right next to the Mariana Trench.
Right.
And we actually, like, went over and floated over the Mariana Trench just, you know, to avoid a typhoon.
That's all.
So
yeah,
big deal. When people say scientists' lives aren't exciting, that sounds pretty exciting.
Do you like getting seasick?
No, I don't. But
yeah.
I get seasick a lot.
Yeah, so I did too. So that was a really hard cruise because the weather wasn't cooperating.
Yeah.
And if the weather's bad, they're not going to put the robot in the water because
right.
you don't want to lose an $8 million robot at the bottom of the ocean
no.
where no other robot can get it. So
it's very analogous to space, which I'm going to bring us back to eventually. We're going to get there because this is all applicable. Is that the right?
Applicable.
Applicable. Applicable. What's wrong with me today? With exobiology and talking NASA grants and talking about, you know, Europa and Enceladus. And we'll come back to that. But go ahead. So you're doing this research and you're looking at these other bacteria.
Yeah. At the Mariana, it's all the same. Hydrothermal system. They're all on the same crack in the tectonic plate, basically.
Okay.
But each seamount, each volcano, is a little bit different, which is a little weird.
Yeah.
And there's even one where half of the volcano is, like, white and sulfury, and then the other half of it is orange and irony.
That's crazy.
And on this seamount, there are tons of mussels.
Wow.
And the mussels, again, have endosymbionts that are feeding them off of the chemicals in the vents. And one of the cool things about this place, too, is there's the pressure is so great, and there's so much carbon dioxide that there's liquid CO2 bubbles coming out of the crust.
That's so crazy.
It makes a really interesting study because mussel shells are calcium carbonate,
right,
which dissolve in acidic waters, but you have liquid CO2, and so you have these very acidic waters. And these mussels that are
living
right
there.
Next to it.
They're totally cool.
They're totally cool. They've totally adapted to that environment.
Wow.
Are they edible?
No.
Would
they
stink. Yeah, would you want to?
Yeah, so
I don't know. It's hard. My brain goes straight.
But they're
of course
pretty,
they'd be gross.
They're pretty big. They're like as big as mango.
Wow, a small mango. Wow, that's huge. And then they're just like littered.
They're everywhere. Wow. There's tons of them. So Jason had Jason's the robot,
right? The ROV. We keep on saying Jason, but we mean the ROV. The remote. Yeah. Operated vehicle.
One of my colleagues on this cruise was actually named Jason, so it made it a little confusing.
For him. He's yeah. like, I'm not a robot. He had an identity crisis.
Probably.
Yeah.
But we gave Jason, the robot, a net.
Okay.
And he went down and was scooping up mussels.
Yeah.
Filling up the net, putting them in a basket, scooping them up, filling them up this basket. We got like 50 plus mussels from like 4 scoops.
Right.
With this net.
Wow.
And how do you deal with the pressure difference of bringing objects up to
Oh, they die.
Pressure? Well, the end.
Tragic.
Yeah.
So the bacteria actually don't really care.
Okay.
So bacteria are tiny.
Yeah.
And water is pretty much incompressible. And so the pressure
pretty
difference
yeah.
between, for a bacterium, between the bottom of the ocean at 1,500 meters versus
okay. cool.
land isn't that much. Like, there are bacteria that are called piezophiles, which means pressure-loving bacteria.
Wow.
So they only grow in a pressure chamber.
Wow. So, yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, like you have this liquid that it was at, you know, some pressure that's higher down down there, and then you bring it up to the surface that has this
so
lower pressure.
Like. Everything is that we collect is open.
Okay, oh, got it.
Somewhat.
Oh, okay, good, okay, good.
So there is, we're not like...
closing
it
up and then
tight.
It bursts when it
yeah. yeah so there is pressure valves and then the robot is packed with oil
okay got it.
So that it doesn't compress and die pressure is
that's
a huge difference so
it's huge so that's,
and it's
yeah.
it's really hard on the robot and that's why you know everything that's on the robot is pressure rated to a certain depth which
okay.
is a greater depth than it can actually go
right
so
and
for
so
safety.
I want to take this moment then, because we're talking about pressures.
Yeah.
And in our previous discussion, we were talking about how much I love Europa, and I love, of course, space. Our listeners know this. But a lot of this bacteria stuff and volcanic vents, it's all been in the literature and the discussion of talking about Europa and Enceladus and all these other moons of all these planets that have water and
mm-hmm.
they could possibly have these volcanic vents at the bottom of, you know, their oceans and therefore they might be able to have,
yeah.
you know, bacteria and organisms. But you were saying that, well, yeah, they totally could, but the pressures would be totally different.
Yeah. So those organisms are going to, you know, if they're there, their evolutionary pressures are going to be not atmospheric pressure, but the growth pressure is going to be completely different than anything on Earth. But there will be similar constraints. Like, carbon we would expect to be a major player
right.
in all life. And water, and if there's a water-rock interface, like, that's going to be that. Or ice-water interface.
Right.
That's going to be a place where life could form.
Right.
And these moons of Jupiter have large gravitational pulls on them from Jupiter, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so their core is probably liquid, too, and they
right.
can have vents the same way that Earth has vents.
If you're just joining us, this is Jordan Baker. Today we're talking about life at volcanic vents.
Scientists have found volcanic activity with Enceladus, right?
Yeah.
They have these, what did you call them? The
cryovolcanoes.
Cryovolcanism, yeah. And then there was a Titan also, right? We were looking up that
yeah.
Titan also has it. And Europa, I mean, we haven't seen any, like, plumes yet, but we do see this, like, cracking of the ice of Europa. So,
yeah.
Jordan, do you know anything that what I'm talking about here?
I have no idea what we're talking about, other than it's a couple of moons from Saturn?
Jupiter,
sorry.
Yeah. Titan is Saturn, so you're right.
Titan
actually.
Is Saturn?
Well, Titan is a moon from Saturn, sorry.
Okay, yeah.
One of, like, 16?
Yeah. So, well, like Enceladus is Jupiter of Saturn. I don't remember now.
I can't remember now.
Oh, no. God. Listeners, tell me, and I'm going to look it up right after because I feel bad, but Europa is definitely one of the four largest moons of Jupiter.
Okay.
And I was obsessed with it, and we've talked about this on other shows. It's just covered with ice, mm-hmm. and it's like, I think of it as like cold water world. It's basically what it is.
Very cold.
Very, very, very cold. Yeah.
And they're doing NASA's doing the Europa Clipper soon.
Yes.
And so they're gearing up for...
Like, sending a Viking ship to...
Yeah.
Awesome.
Vikings like the cold.
Yeah. They cut exactly. the ice. That's what Frozen told me.
Yep. That's a movie.
There's actually a really bad movie about Europa.
Yes. The Europa Report?
Yes.
Is that bad?
Oh, it's awful.
Because I haven't seen it, and like all of my relatives are like, you gotta watch this.
You kind
of
do.
All by, like, two maybe have mentioned it.
Yeah. NASA's really interested in, like, life processes and space processes. And, right. like... So we're exploring space, and we don't think that what happened on Earth is unique.
Right.
If you can go out and study or find environments on Earth that might be analogous to other environments on different planets, on exoplanets, or icy moons, or whatever.
Right.
That if you write a convincing enough story about that, they will give you money to study this Earth analog.
Right. And did you do that?
Yeah. So I did that last week. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And so my idea was to hydrothermal vents make great places for life to begin.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of concentrated chemicals. Some of the earliest reactions that are hypothesized for life to begin would happen spontaneously at vents. Vents are also deep in the water, so they're going to be protected from solar radiation.
Right.
Early Earth didn't have an atmosphere like it has now that protects us on the surface.
Right. So let's hope, let's all hope, you know, Dr. Heather Fullerton gets her grant that she wrote last week. But yeah, no, it's really interesting, and I'm so glad that you can get funding from NASA. I mean, because it's such a hot topic, this idea that there might be microbes outside of our, you know, outside of Earth, away from Earth, not on Earth. We're already talking about TV, or in movies. You're saying that the Europa Report was bad. Now I want to watch it, and I want to see how bad it is.
Mm-hmm. It's awful.
Okay. So I want to talk about other just bad TV, bad movies that, like, portray your field in a not-so-great, accurate way.
Well, so there's lots of mistakes that happen in anything that deals with biology. And one of them is evolution is super fast.
Right, yeah.
It's not. It's real slow. It takes generations, and especially for evolution of people.
Right.
It's going to take multiple generations, so thousands of years.
Right. Not like, you know, in 50 years we're going to look like this.
Right.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or mutants like X-Men.
Right.
Like, we're all a little bit mutants.
Right.
Because we all look different.
Yeah.
Do you think that one day... I could shoot lasers from my eyes?
No.
Dang it.
Are you from Krypton? I mean...
I don't know. Is that... Cyclops? Is he from Krypton? No. Or all the X-Men from a different planet?
Touché, Jordan.
Yeah!
And then, like, when mutations do happen in our genome, we just get cancer.
Right. Yes. It's not like... Sadly, it's not as
you're not going to turn into the Hulk because you get exposed to radiation.
Right. I know, it's so bad.
And so those are just really common mistakes that happen in all of these movies, and they're not very exciting.
Right.
You know, movies have to make things exciting. They have to go quickly. And I think it was Outbreak, where the virus went from being, like, transmitted person to person to being airborne, and they looked at
instantly.
It.
Instantly.
Yeah. And they looked at it, like, through a microscope, and... One, you can't see viruses in a microscope. They're too small.
Mm. See, I don't know these things.
And so that kind of quick change isn't going to happen, but it makes for really exciting TV.
Right.
I was thinking about that question about movies and stuff, and I was like trying to think of a good example where they got it right.
Yeah.
And actually, War of the Worlds.
Really?
Yeah. So the alien invaders all die.
From water, right?
No, that's Signs.
That's
I was thinking the same thing. I was like,
that was bad. That was bad because...
Oh, I didn't like that movie for other reasons too. But yeah, sorry. War of the Worlds, how did the aliens die? Because
they got infected with bacteria.
Okay.
So all life on Earth is perfectly adapted to the bacteria that's in the air.
Right.
And these aliens come down and they're like, oh, crap. Because they've never seen... They don't have an immunity to this. So it's just like something that's like, you know, Staph aureus or Staph epidermis, which is like all over our skin. Just killed them all off.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Well, I mean, I don't think the book gave them a name, but it was just like they all died.
Right. Well, I mean, it's
massive infection.
Our sad histories, right, of colonization kind of tell us these things. Yes. Right. And but yeah, no, I agree. That is more accurate. And then you were saying TV-wise.
Oh, TV.
TV is, like, crime shows are bad,
crime shows are the worst.
That's what you were saying. But they're so popular.
I mean, again, lab work is super slow and tedious a lot of times.
Right.
Like, you'll set up a reaction to sequence a genome, and you get the results, like, days, weeks later.
So CSI know? That's like, oh, I put this in for an hour, I'm done.
Yeah. Right. I know this person's history, where they're born and how they grew up and, like, their parents. And
they had this haircut.
Yeah.
From their DNA.
Yeah.
They're just watching all the faces change and, oh, got a hit on CODIS. We're, it's Charlie.
I think there was one where they were given a DNA sequence and then they, like, figured out what the guy looked like. I'm like, really?
Yeah, right? No, so I'm going to take a quick just plug for my daughter. I love my daughter. We were just talking about her. She's going to be 7 very soon. She was at a pool with her cousins just a couple days ago. And we all, as kids, know when you're at a public pool, sometimes kids poop in the pool. This is back to our poop discussion, actually. And you know when that happens, all the kids get out of the pool. You know this, Jordan, right? I mean, the people
Why are you bringing me into it? Like,
Jordan
didn't
poop
in
the
pool. I was the kid.
No.
Jordan, you know this, right?
You know this.
You remember this. They get the net out. They net the turd, and then they shock it.
Right, and then they test the water, right, before people can come back in, or they have to drain the pool, right? There's this process. So as this is going on, my daughter and her, like, cousins are sitting there, and my daughter goes over to, the pool manager, and my daughter's like, who pooped in the pool? And the manager's like, honey, you know, I don't know. And my daughter goes, well, can't you get some DNA? So, like,
most of that DNA would be bacteria.
Bacteria,
though.
Right? Yeah. She didn't know that. But, like, my daughter, somebody who's, like, not even 7 yet, like, believes these shows. I don't let her watch crime shows, just a heads up.
She wants Horatio to figure it out.
Right, right.
Put on his glasses.
But she honestly thinks, like, in her mind, just, like, this whole, like, you get DNA and instantly you'll know all these things, you know? And she has this kid show that did, like, a similar DNA thing, but it did take, you know, a few days in the show. But she doesn't understand.
Oh,
that.
And the other, they always take DNA from, like, a hairbrush.
Right.
Or fingernails and hair, like, unless it has a follicle attached to it is dead and has no DNA.
Yeah.
Red blood cells don't even have DNA.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So you can get DNA from blood, but it's from white blood cells.
Oh. So unless it has a follicle.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, so unless you have, like, some, like, blood or something on the nail.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, skin cells totally have DNA.
Okay, got it. Or so it was, like, a skin flake on the nail.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. But not, like, the nail itself.
Yeah, if you most of the hair on your hairbrush doesn't have a follicle, which means it doesn't have DNA. But, you know, CSI, they'll find, like, one single hair, and they'll be like, we know who this person is now.
Right. It can't be, like, the cat hair, right? I mean, like, to even think that you would get the exact hair from the person you're looking for is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
This is all awesome.
Yeah.
For later crimes that I will commit.
Right. You're on the air now, so. But you'll
leave your skin cells.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll wear a Tyvek suit.
Ew. Well, there's like Gattaca, right? That movie Gattaca, where he like scrubs himself and he tries to get all the skin, flaky skin cells off, and he's like,
because that would totally work.
Right, right. And he's like placing, like, you know, hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they get DNA from, like, hair, skin, and urine in that. And again, urine's not going to really have DNA in it.
Yeah.
Because unless, like, there's skin cells coming off as you're peeing.
Right.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's weird.
And that's going to be, like, very small portion.
Right, it's going
to
be hard
total volume.
You have to be that person that has to sift through the pee to get that. But you were saying that one of the TV shows that was actually good was Bones.
Bones does good things every once in a while.
Okay, got it.
So they're decent.
There's multiple people working on the same thing. Like, the computer chick, she's a little overboard.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that's... I mean, maybe it works, but I don't think so.
Like the facial reconstruction lady?
Yeah.
She's like, done.
Yeah. An hour, done. I know who this is.
Yeah, and she's like, I wrote this new program.
Yeah.
I was like, really?
In an hour.
Some of the stuff that they do is pretty accurate. Okay. There's one episode that I really liked where they actually found there's a type of tube worms that degrades bones. and they found it on a body at the bottom of the ocean.
That's awesome.
And so those tube worms were really cool, and they degrade like whale bones, because whales die a lot, and so there's
well, they die.
When they die, they fall to the bottom of the ocean, and then there's lots of things that are like, ooh, free meal.
Right.
Right.
And that was accurate, you're saying.
And that was accurate, yeah. The tube worms. And like, they're pretty recently discovered class of tube worms, and they're related to the ones that live at the hydrothermal vents.
That's so awesome. And then you'd said that you learned about those tube worms from bones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what? Are those real?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I looked it up, and Wikipedia was like, yeah, totally, yeah, those are real.
Well, I actually, Bones is the only crime show I've ever watched, and we're going to come back to this. Hopefully, we can get a medical anthropologist on here in the future, and we'll talk about Bones again. Yeah, is there any other...
I was supposed to say Star Trek is really bad.
Star Trek
just
is
for you.
Yeah, yeah, it's not good at all.
Biology. It's a great show.
It is a great... See? I win again. So what bad biology happens in... You're talking Star Trek Next Generation, I'm guessing?
Well, all of them, actually.
All of them.
Fail at this.
Yeah.
The big thing they fail at
is... The morals are good.
The storylines are pretty good some of the time, too.
Nope.
Yeah.
But one of the things they really fail at is you have, like, Vulcans and humans... Completely different planets, completely different organisms, and then they can still breed.
Right. I think about that all the time. But actually, Star Trek came back and acknowledged that.
That was a very, very bad episode.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And then there was a Next Generation episode. It's actually one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah. But tell me all about it, because I know it.
Jeez. This is torture.
Do you remember Barclay?
Oh, Barclay. Reginald Barclay. They used to call him Broccoli because he was so boring. Yeah. Go on.
So there was an episode where he was like, I think I have a cold, because he's a total hypochondriac.
Yeah.
And he goes to the doctor, and the doctor is like, well, engineer this virus thing for you to reactivate your latent T cells or something like that.
Yeah.
It mutates, and all of the crew starts de-evolving.
Yes! That's one of... Yes. I love that episode. It's so bad.
And Barclay, I think, turns into this giant humanoid spider type thing.
Yes, correct.
Which... There are so many things wrong with that happening.
Well, that everyone was de-evolving into different things made no sense.
So
bad. The evolutionary histories of humans and spiders.
Right. So different.
Yeah, one, we're vertebrates.
Right.
Spiders are invertebrates.
Right.
Like, we split forever ago.
Right.
And if you activate latent genes.
Right.
In a genome, again, you're probably just going to get cancer.
Right, right. Thank you so much, Dr. Heather Fullerton. Heather, for coming.
Yeah.
Congratulations on getting that space grant finished last week. And I hope the rest of the summer will go good and you get a lot of data from your last science cruise.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us. We just spoke with Dr. Heather Fullerton about life at volcanic vents. If you missed any of the show, go to our website, kmre.org, and click on the podcast link.
This is Spark Science, and I'm Regina Barber DeGraff.
And I'm Jordan Baker. We'll be back again next week. Listen to us Sunday at 5 o'clock, Wednesday at 9 o'clock, and Saturday at noon.
There's a science idea that you are curious about? Send us an email or post a message on our Facebook page, Spark Science. And if you like the show and would like to help us out, go to kmre.org and click on the button Donate.
Today's episode, Life at Volcanic Vents, was produced in the KMRE Spark Radio Studios, located in the Spark Museum on Bay Street in Bellingham. Our producer and engineer for the day is Katie Knutson. Our theme music is Chemical Calisthenics by Blackalicious and Wonderland by Janelle Monáe.
Here we go.
Neutron, proton, mass defect, lyrical oxidation. You're irrelevant, mass spectrograph, your electron volt, atomic energy erupting as I get all open on betatrons, gamma rays, thermal cracking, cyclotron, any and every mic you're on, transuranium, if you're always uranium, molecules, spontaneous combustion, pow. Law of definite proportion, gaining weight, I'm every element around. Lead, gold, tin, iron, platinum, zinc. When I rap, you think iodine, nitrate, activate. Red uranium, the only difference is I transmit sound. Balance, whistle, balance, then you add a little talent in.
Careful, careful with those ingredients. They can explode and blow up if you drop them and they hit the ground.